The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
People say all the time, how the hell did we get here? How did we get here? It's what I love about history. I mean, once you really, if you're fascinated by history, you can just track things back. It's like your family tree. Look at the insanity and track it back. Where did this come from? There is genetic codes riddled in everything that is happening in our country. You can track the DNA back. For example, political correctness. Oh, no, it was good because we all want to be good. Really? Is that it? I'll come back to it here in a second. Recent study called Hidden Tribes, study of America's polarized landscape. This was highlighted Wednesday in The Atlantic. Now, more specifically, how the majority of Americans hate political correctness. Wait a minute. What? 80% of America believes PC, quote, is a problem in our country, end quote. Oh, yeah. The further you break down the numbers, the more revealing it gets. This isn't going to surprise you. 97% of conservatives have serious issues with political correctness. But this number might. The majority of middle-of-the-road Democrats also hate political correctness. 61% of them, to be exact. The great divide between middle-left and the middle-right might actually be closer than you think. There is one group that loves, absolutely loves political correctness, and it is the extreme progressive. That is 8%. 8% of the population. The study found that 70% of progressives on the left fully support politically correct language. Now, that is amazing when you look at it's only 70% of 8%. What a small minority within America has successfully done and dominated the narrative in this country. Think about it. Progressives aren't even the majority on the left or in the Democratic Party. It's 8%. Yet somehow they have hypnotized the entire country into believing that everything we say or do has to be looked at through the lens of political correctness. Now, the youth, 74% hate PC. Asians, 82% hate PC. Hispanics, 87%. The numbers are all across the board. But progressives, a tiny minority, 8%, has all of us following their lead. Why? Why are progressives even so enamored with all of this? It's simple. To shut down any kind of debate or public conversation that threatens their agenda. Progressives didn't invent this strategy. They stole it. And that's where, if you're a lover of history, you can go. Where did the new American left steal this strategy from? Political correctness, we believe, was first coined in the late 1920s, not by progressives, but in the Soviet Union. It was used by the Communist Party when anyone had expressed a pro-capitalist viewpoint, they needed correction to the party line. So let's say a member of the Politburo was caught reading Adam Smith. That's politically incorrect. Maybe they expressed favor for privatizing state-run business. Very politically incorrect. Marxists knew that these ideas might actually be factually correct, but they were not politically correct. When you finally raise the progressive curtain, it reveals all of their secrets, and they are dark secrets. And at the same time, everything we're going through begins to make sense.
It's Friday, October 12th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly, welcome to the program.
Beck, how you doing?
I am very good. I'm very good. There is a interview with our First Lady today, and I believe our First Lady has displayed grace and great composure. And I don't care how you feel about the president. I think enough is enough with Melania Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see her in a position where she's being vilified on a daily basis by the press. They snipe at her. I've known her for a long time. Very charming woman, very intelligent, loves children. I think she's done a very good job as First Lady, and there's really no reason to disparage Melania Trump.
You know, my breaking point was last week when she was over in Egypt and she was over in Africa.
Yeah.
And the photos coming back of her were beautiful. I mean, it was a Ralph Lauren photo spread. And all mm-hmm. the press could do was, if they published any of those photos, they just tore her down for colonialism and all this crap.
Colonialism.
I know. And I then know. She, I mean, but, here she yeah, is. The most beautiful woman in the Oval Office with the greatest style since Jackie O. They loved Camelot and her style. She was on the cover of every fashion magazine. But no fashion magazine will put Melania Trump on.
No, of course not.
It's
because
ridiculous.
Then they couldn't go out to their cocktail parties and
correct.
All that. You did your commentary on the political correctness, the 8%. But, Beck, you left out some really big thing. This could never have happened without the
media.
Open support of the media.
Yes. I put the media in that 8%.
Political correctness. Hey, let me just tell you a quick story, okay?
All right.
So this week I've been doing a lot of promotion for Killing the SS, which came out on Tuesday. And in that promotion, I'm basically saying that we in America are seeing a rise of hate and evil. And I tie it in a number of ways. One of the ways that I tied it in was that George Soros and his crew have bought up about 20 PACs, political action committees. And they send them out on missions. And one of those missions was Senator Flake in the elevator with the CNN camera right behind the woman screaming at him because she was a victim of something and he was an idiot for not siding with her. Who's the woman? The woman's an activist in a Soros PAC making $175,000 a year. All right, so I tell that story, which is entirely accurate, 100% correct, and Media Matters, within a half an hour, says that I compared the woman to the Third Reich. Okay? Now, that's what's going on here. That's what's in play. So the 8% progressive zealot fanatics could never have imposed anything on this country without the media taking up their cause and actually doing the dirty work.
I put the media in that 8%. It is the reason why it has swept the country. It is, you're right, because of the media, but they are
right.
Part of that 8%.
Look what happened to Kanye West, my favorite guy of all time. Okay?
Yeah.
So Kanye West, who I didn't really meet him. I was in an elevator with him at Madison
right.
Square Garden one
right,
time.
Right.
He had short pants on and he was brooding.
Right.
Okay. So he goes on Saturday Night Live, which is staked out territory to destroy Donald Trump because it's good for Saturday Night Live's ratings. That's why they do it. All right. So Kanye gets invited to go on. He wears the Make America Great Again hat. And no one likes him, and he's shunned, and he's brooding again because he's being bullied by Saturday Night Live. Okay, fine. Then, because of that, Trump invites him to the Oval Office, where Kanye walks in with the hat and does Lombada with the president, or whatever they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, why does anyone care? Why?
Thank you for saying
so,
this.
CNN takes his whole day.
Yeah, I know. He's talking about what he wants to
vilify Kanye West.
Right.
Now, Taylor Swift, she comes out against Trump. All right? And she's telling everybody in Tennessee, I am out against him. So Taylor Swift and Kanye West, do I care what they think about geopolitics in any regard? Beck, the answer is no, I don't. And no one else does either. But this is a tremendous example of political correctness. That Kanye West is going against the PC, so he must be vilified.
So I want to come back because maybe you should get a cup of coffee in or something. I need you to get a little more animated here, Bill.
All right.
But when we come back, I want to ask you about, because you follow ratings. the ratings are falling apart. Let's look at the numbers of, you know, from like Beto and others that are running in the Senate. The numbers seem to be falling apart. I think that there is a change afoot, and the Democrats don't see it. And when they get their head handed to them by the people, I think they're going to double down yet again. We'll get Bill O'Reilly's comment on that coming up in just a second. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. His new book is out. It is Killing the SS, and it is really good. It's worth the read. Pick it up and read it. It's really, really good.
Glenn Beck.
Bill O'Reilly, let's talk a little bit about what the Democrats should be learning and what they're not learning. Kavanaugh, since that nightmare, looks like the poll numbers are switching dramatically, at least in the Senate.
Yeah, Senate polls have been really good for Republicans since the Kavanaugh thing, which I don't know if that's a huge surprise to anybody, but I mean, you know, Beto is now down by, it looks like, 8 to Ted Cruz, which is, you know, about double the lead he had before then. And then, as Bill mentioned, Taylor Swift comes out and talks about how bad Marsha Blackburn is. Latest poll has her up by 14 in what was thought to be a toss-up race.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Democrats are learning their lesson, and yet they're doubling down, Bill. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what Eric Holder said this week and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I paid more attention to what Kanye West and Taylor Swift said than Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder.
I know.
Dennis Miller thinks that Eric Holder is really Stedman, Oprah's boyfriend, and they look alike. And you should put that up on the Blaze, mm-hmm, side mm-hmm. by side. Anyway, there's a few interesting things in play here. Beto has raised $38 million in the last 6 months or so, which is breaks every work in the world. Where is that money coming from? It's coming from Soros and his guys and the Hollywood people and all of that. So he'll stay competitive. I think he'll lose.
Let me stop there.
Go ahead.
I've met people who have given to both sides millions of dollars. They're not happy with the party that loses. When you give a lot of money and the party says, no, this is the one, this is going to change everything, and then you lose, especially if they lose by 8 points.
But those are normal people. I'm talking about the real shadowy guys. That's what Beto's getting. He's getting that big Soros money coming in.
I guess, maybe, yeah.
And he doesn't. They just want, you know, search and destroy. So I think that, you know, I agree with you, Beck, and that always hurts my toes when I say that, that there is a backlash and that the Kavanaugh spectacle alienated decent, and when I say decent, I mean fair-minded people.
Yeah, both Democrat and Republican.
You know, when you have, and I bring this up a lot, no one working for you and no one working for me could have tweeted out, well, Kavanaugh was confirmed, but at least we destroyed his life. Remember that tweet?
Yes.
Who did it come from?
Came from Letterman's writers.
Colbert.
Letterman's Colbert. You're right. Yeah, you're right. Right. Sorry.
Okay. One of the writers for Letterman, for Colbert, both insane. One of the writers for Colbert tweeted that out. Okay. One of the most hateful things I've ever seen. So if that happened in your organization, my organization, then that person wouldn't be working for us.
If we would have tweeted out, but at least we got Ford, really destroyed her, it would have been a horror show. That person would not be working today.
And they probably couldn't go out of the house.
Right.
So people know this. Even if you like Colbert, which I don't, even if you are sympathetic to Dr. Ford and all of that Me Too stuff, even if you're buying into it, you've got to know, all right, that the rhetoric and the plan to destroy human beings is not what America is all about.
Yes.
It's not. And you know, when you think in history, Stalin and Hitler and what they did by destroying their opposition, You know, later on it was physically. But in the beginning, they couldn't murder people. But they did it other ways. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in America. The hate is rising. The fear is rising. All of this is in play. And guys like you and I, unfortunately, we have to fight against this. And then that puts us in the kill zone. But to get back to the politics, I do think there's going to be a backlash. I'm not sure about the House of Representatives, but the Senate, I believe, will be even more Republican than it is now.
So let me ask you this. If they do have, they lose the Senate, where just a few weeks ago, the person who was in the best position to win for the Republicans was Ted Cruz, and he was only 1 or 2 points ahead of Beto. So he was in the best position. Now it looks like they could, if it's a good day, they could end up with a majority of 54-55.
Yeah.
That's significant. If, especially with, you know, Donald Trump as president, the most hated man of all time, if they do lose, do you think they will say, okay, wait a minute, this democratic socialism, this anger,
no,
all of that?
No, they're never going to do that. Right.
They're going to go harder, don't you think?
Yeah, of course. I mean, these people are really, really deranged. And there are some on the right like that as well.
Yes.
But not nearly the numbers on the left. And, of course, the media promotes that. But if they win, the Democrats win the House, then that's all you're going to hear. You're not going to hear anything about the Senate.
Yes.
And the House, you know, that's a little shaky because, as everybody knows, the first term in Clinton, the first term in Obama, they lost.
You always do.
And the opposition party
you always
won the House.
Right.
And that's just the way Americans
do it.
Usually vote.
Yeah. So, Bill, how do you feel about the use of the M word?
The M word?
you know, the M word. You're not going to use the M word, are you?
I don't know what it is, Beck.
Oh,
you're
my gosh.
You're toying with me.
No, I am not, Bill. Two anchors on CNN this week freaked out because a guest was saying the M word when he was talking about these protesters about Kavanaugh.
Mob word.
Oh my gosh! Don't say. Oh my gosh! Don't say mob. How could you?
Oh, you can't do that. That's
can you?
Right.
Can you believe that?
No,
how
because,
would you define mob?
The Tea Party was labeled a mob, and so do you.
Yep.
And they danced around the set going, there's the mob, there's the mob, look at the mob. But now you can't do that. Of course it's a mob. That Kavanaugh thing was, there was no better example in modern political history than a mob in that. No better example.
Are the numbers, quickly, I've got about 25 seconds, are the numbers in cable news still going down? Are people waking up to this?
I'm going to have to talk about that when we come back from the break because they're not going down in the wake of a Kavanaugh or the wake of a hurricane story. But there is erosion, and I'll tell you why it's happening.
Okay, back with Bill O'Reilly, who has his new book out, came this week. Make sure you pick it up, Killing the SS. It's really good.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
GlennBeck.com/tour is the place you should go if you feel like I do that the only thing we can do right now with all the nonsense from the Democratic Party is to laugh at them. You want to be part of this tour. It's going all around the country. You can get all the dates at GlennBeck.com/tour. There's lots of cool packages with books involved and everything else. It's the Addicted to Outrage tour going around America.
Bill, you should come. You should come. We should do one of these together.
You know, be a camp follower. I'll probably go from town to town.
No. You should come. You should pick a city and you should come, and we'll do one together. It'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible
we can
do that.
But
I'd rather kind of like stand outside as North Beach, San Francisco, and just kind of, hey, Glenn Beck here, everyone, come on in, 2-for-1.
All right, Bill O'Reilly, last question here on this stuff. Tell me about the press and the numbers.
Okay, so what's happening is not just in cable news, but it's in all kinds of television watching, is that the machines have now overwhelmed the American public, your devices, whatever you call it. The urchins started it. They don't watch television anymore. My kids used to. They don't anymore. And now news consumption is following in that regard. So people are getting used to the fact that BillO'Reilly.com is there, the Blaze is there, they can get it whenever they want, 24/7. So why do I have to sit there and wait for some show to come on? That's the under 55 set in America. Yes. Over 55, they still like their martinis, they like the clicker, they like 8 o'clock knowing that somebody's on.
Right.
And they but they're starting to get bored with it, Beck. Because if you watch it, it's numbing. The same thing said over and over. How many times can human beings say the phrase, at the end of the day? We are now at 52 million times on cable news. All right? It's just insipid, word of the day, insipid. And you want information. You want a vibrant opinion that perhaps is a little bit different. You never get it. And so it's the guests rather than the hosts. The hosts are who they are, and you like them or you don't. But the guests, I mean, it's just impossible to watch.
Impossible. It really is.
Yeah.
It really
is. So the erosion you can see in the demographics, it's there on the page every night on the overnight ratings. The younger people are going away. That's the first sign. And then the cracks once Trump gets off the stage, because he drives everything now, 100% in the media. Once he gets off the stage, it'll all collapse.
So, Bill, let's spend a few minutes on your book.
Thank you.
Let's talk about, you know, I know why you wrote this book, to parallel and show the parallels of evil and how that can happen. But I'm fascinated by the stories that you tell in this.
Let me tell you two, so your listeners will understand what we're doing here. There was a concentration camp named Ravensbrück. It was for women, just women, and it was north of Berlin. And nobody ever heard of it. Of course, the concentration camps were kept away from the German people. They weren't spotlighted. There was no news reportage in the Third Reich. You either did what they said, or they put a bullet in your head, or you went to the concentration camp. So anyway, at this concentration camp was a young woman named Elfriede Huff, H-U-T-H. And she had a German Shepherd dog, as most of the SS guards did. And she terrorized women and participated in heinous crimes against them. Before the war, she was a seamstress and went to work and came home and had a Wiener Schnitzel or whatever you do in Germany. Okay? And then all of a sudden, she's in a black uniform, killing and maiming and torturing other people. Elfriede Huff. After the war ends, Elfriede comes to San Francisco. All right, gets to San Francisco on a refugee visa in 1959. All right, settles, marries a Jew. Everybody in the neighborhood loves her. Elfriede's the nicest woman. 50 years later, they get her. The State Department finally tracks her down, sends her back to Germany, where she's still alive, Beck, and every month gets a United States Social Security check. Hmm. Quite a story, huh?
It's amazing how these people just disappeared.
And they were helped.
By us.
A year before the war ended, Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS and one of the most heinous human beings ever to walk the planet, knew that they were going to lose. So they formed an organization called Odessa. You may remember the movie The Odessa File.
Mm-hmm.
They had packs of money, and they spread out all over Europe, and they designed escape routes for the SS in the concentration camps. Eichmann, Mengele, Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, all participated. And thousands of other SS. And while General Patton was occupying southern Germany, he was focused on Stalin and the Soviet Union's expansion. So the United States wasn't tracking these people at all. and they just got out en masse. Most of them went to South America, where they had to be tracked down. And how they were tracked down is just an amazing read.
It really is. It really is. Great, great job on this. What was the research like on this, Bill?
Well, we caught a break because when we wrote Killing Jesus, we established a very strong relationship with the Israeli government. They helped us a lot. And we went back and said, now we're going to do a book on tracking the Nazis and the SS. And they opened up their files, the Mossad files, and stuff that people had never seen. We had never seen it. It was amazing. And that's why we can put the reader on when they're getting Eichmann. It's like a step-by-step. We take you through it step-by-step. All right. It's not some like, oh, they got him.
Yeah.
It's how exactly it happened.
The scenes that you have in there where you are talking about the boyfriend or the son and
yes.
the girlfriend, and she doesn't have any idea. And then she realizes and they're like, hey, go look him up again and see if you can develop a relationship. And she's talking to this SS killer who she thought was nice. And she's like, and she realizes at that moment, oh, dear God, that's who he is.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of stories in there, like Martin Bormann, Hitler's assistant, who was not well known. They said he died when Hitler committed suicide a few hours afterward. He didn't. And we uncovered the dental work that proved he got away to Bariloche, Argentina. I mean, people don't know that. So the book, first day out, sold more than 100,000 copies. And a lot of that's thanks to you, Beck, and I really appreciate it. And it's going great, and we hope people check it out.
We're thrilled. Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk next week, guys.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. His new book is Killing the SS.
Glenn Beck.
I have some exciting things to announce to you coming up in just a few minutes, and I believe there's going to be more on Monday that we're very excited to share with you. We'll do that in a few minutes. On the podcast this weekend, and you can get this podcast anywhere you find podcasts, now on Spotify as well. This weekend, Eric Bolling, a one-on-one, a conversation about what happened with his son and how it affected him.
I'll add one more to that. I lost my faith that day too, Glenn. I had gone to church 5 days a week during the week and every Sunday. September 8th of 2017 was the last day I went to church. Early in the day, I had spent a long time going back and forth with Fox, with lawyers, trying to figure out where I was going to go forward, what was going to happen. And we came upon an idea that we were going to separate. I was separating from Fox. They said amicably separating. Bolling and Fox are amicably separating. And I looked at it on that day as a new beginning. And go start and go find another job somewhere, and life's going to be great.
And you were going to sue.
I didn't know what I was going to do, okay. Glenn. I will tell you that whatever was written about me was false, patently false. Mm-hmm. It was a lie. It never happened, and no one has ever come forward. It was all anonymous sourcing. Make a long story short, my lawyer said it's probably time to just cut ties with Fox and move on and go find another job. This could go on forever, and frankly, my family was going to be dragged through the mud for a long time. So I decided that was the thing to do. We cut ties around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a Friday before a long weekend. Before Labor Day, I took my wife out to dinner that night, and we were going to celebrate. The owner of the restaurant came over and said, hey, you know, congratulations, this is a new start. We had a nice drink. On the way home, we got the call. We were driving home, and my phone rang. There was a young man on the other side of the phone saying, Mr. Bolling, call your son. Call Eric right away. I said, what's wrong? He said, just call Eric right away. I called over there, and a girl answered, and her name was Kayla. He had been seeing her on and off. She was crying, and for some reason, I just went right to, is he alive? She said no. That was a rough day. The next day, went to Colorado, and the president called me. He says, "Anything we can do for you?" I said, "No, thank you." But at that day, I realized that he cared, and so for the next few months, I made it my mission to create awareness around opioids. Eric bought a Xanax on campus, and was laced with fentanyl, and it killed. So, yeah, so that was that day. And so now we are a year and 2 days after that, and it's been a rough go.
We can stop at any time if you don't want to talk about anything. So, I think it's just an important story to tell. When you said, "Is he alive?" Why? Were there indications, or no. Was it just a dad feeling?
It was a feeling. Who gets a call at 10:30 at night and is told to call your son right away without explaining why? And I just had the hunch, and sure enough, the hunch turned out to be true. So turns out he bought a Xanax on campus that was laced with fentanyl. It wasn't a prescriptive Xanax. He didn't know, and he passed and was an accidental overdose. So the question you asked me, was I going to sue Fox? At that moment, I had no fight in me to do anything. So my wife and I just got very close, and we spent the better part of the next year just talking to other parents, talking any opportunity we could to get the word out that it's an epidemic. Excuse me. And parents need to know that their children are at risk, and it's a massive epidemic in the country. Young kids need to know that one pill can kill you. They're not sure what you're ever taking. And parents need to know that your child isn't too smart, too popular, too athletic to be exposed to potentially dying from an overdose.
It's a very emotional and I think important interview. There are places that I want to go, and Eric has promised to come back, but I didn't want to dogpile. We recorded this on September, I think, 10th, and it was just a few days after the one-year anniversary, and he was very, very, very raw. It's the first time that he has really spoken out about it and what his thoughts are, and I think everybody, no matter what side you're on the opioid thing, I mean, I got an emotional call yesterday from somebody on the TV show that said, "Thank you for speaking up for opioids, because there are those of us who we cannot live without them. We can't." This woman said, because of her disease, she can't even sit up in bed, and she's bedridden without the opioid. There are, you know, all of these things. They're double-edged swords. They're good when they're used properly, and they are deadly when they are abused, and it's up to each of us to know what we're dealing with, and they are deadly. That podcast also goes into his relationship with the president and what he has seen of the president, and it's a very fascinating interview with Eric Bolling. You can find that podcast wherever you download your podcast, iTunes, now on Spotify, but everywhere. The Glenn Beck Podcast. They come out every Saturday, a different interview with somebody who is truly fascinating.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.